I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks, and I am flying solo today. My co-pilot, Oliver Wong, will be back next week. As you know, every episode we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, fire, flammables, an album that bumps eternally. And today we'll be playing a numbers game, getting into the 2011 album from Emily King, Seven. Independence Day is a federal holiday in the U.S. commemorating the Declaration of Independence of the United States on July the 4th, 1776. July 12, 2011 was Independence Day for Emily King, the day she released her sophomore project 7 as an independent artist after being dropped by her label J Records sometime after the release of her Grammy-nominated project East Side Story and a smash single that I played on my radio show, in the car, and at the house called Walk in My Shoes. Seven is a seven-track reintroduction to Emily, an album whose themes include, in the artist's own words, isolation. It is not the same isolation as in Faulkner's Rose for Emily, where aloneness makes you do crazy things. No, this is the kind where you build a tiny recording studio in a closet in your grandmother's house and come out of it with some of the most soft, soulful, prettily arranged pieces that make me feel like this is an album all about me and my situations. When Emily King recorded Seven, all she had was time, not money. And clearly time and a small space was all she needed. This album and that voice are a cross between what you didn't know you needed and what you did. You need songs that cast music as a symbol of spirituality. Songs like Sides about transparency and real realness. Songs like No More Room about saying peace to something that has overstayed its welcome and no longer suits you. This album is fire, as we say, flammable. And since we started out talking about the 4th of July, we should end that way. Emily King's album is all that. But it isn't like those super loud, low-key illegal, high-key dangerous, alarm-killing, police-inviting fireworks that you know you shouldn't have had around the kids. This album is more like a sparkler, which according to Wikipedia is a type of handheld firework that burns slowly while emitting colored flames, sparks, and other effects. Its art was made with a floating timeline and a DIY studio. It's the open window after your label closes the door and makes you an independent woman. And if I could quote Destiny's Child, girl, I didn't know you could get down like that. Seven is a heat rock. In the heart of the city, someone stops just to say, keep a step. Seven was the album pick of our guest, Braxton Cook. I use these phrases together often, freshman class of jazz and the kids are all right. What I mean to describe is a group of giant talents, kids that do jazz for this generation. You'll know the names, Bowers, Glasper, Kamasi, Scott, Otis Brown III, Jasmia Horn, Pender Hughes, and Braxton Cook. What a wonderful discovery his music has been. Especially the day I stumbled upon FJYD. What a day, what a day. Shout out to Erica. He's multi-talented, nice with the alto saxophone and vocals. And he and all those names I mentioned with him, they got next. So check for this kid, whose fresh selections are just what we need right now. Braxton Cook, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you for having me. That was amazing. It was really beautiful.
Glad to have you. Now, before we get into Seven, you have to tell us, please, where you were musically when the album came out, what you were listening to in 2011, and also, if you can, where you were with your own music.
Sure. Yeah. So I didn't first discover this record when it came out. I guess like, yeah, like you said, 2011, it was a time where I had just made the decision to transfer actually from Georgetown University to Juilliard. I was at this point, I'm studying English. Actually, I'm at Georgetown. My father's a law professor at Georgetown Law School. My older brother went there. My little brother's there now. We pretty much grew up like Hoyas kids, you know. We love watching the basketball team. Like we were Georgetown kids, and I gave it a good, you know, 2 years playing in DC, traveling a bit, playing gigs and stuff, practicing. And a lot of my friends that, you know, a few of them, I don't know, you might know it, Josh Crumley used to play bass with Terrence Blanchard. A few of my friends, like we were all kind of some of the better players in the nation in high school, met in the Grammy band and stuff, and they went on to pursue music. I went to Georgetown. So I'm watching them kind of start touring and their careers start budding, you know, Bowers even. And I you know, they call me from time to time and I hear them, you know, I see their successes and they text me. And one day they called me on my birthday, actually, Joshua Crumley and a friend, Luke Salenza and a Samora Pender Hughes. They all called me and they played Happy Birthday. They're, I guess, on break. And it was after that where I was like, all right, I know I want to be in New York with my friends.
Yeah.
And I want to give this a shot. I apply to transfer. I get in, they match my scholarship, cover everything. And I knew, all right, this is, you know, I have to follow this, you know, like too much kind of just fell into place. So right at that time, you know, you hear this Emily King record and it just, you know, hearing you talk about, yeah, how she leaves this label and goes on, you know, ventures on to create her own sound independently. It speaks to me, you know, like you can hear that and feel that in the music, this sense of discovery and, ownership of oneself and one's path. Right. So I think I definitely gravitated towards it when I first heard it. So it was in that moment of transition, sure. A very big moment.
When I first heard Emily King, that was that Walk in My Shoes song that I was talking about. And I mean, it was a smash. Like, it was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on the radio then. I would play it to death, just insert it in sets. I was like, we ain't even going in this direction, but I'm just going to throw this in real quick.
Yeah.
Come off of a hard dance set and just throw it in. And I loved her voice. And, yeah. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about discovering and about her voice. But tell me what your initial reaction was. You heard this album and you said to yourself, what?
Man, the feelings are just nostalgia, I think. Hit me first. I think the song that spoke to me the most off of Seven was Georgia.
I was not ready the day you gave me your heart. I was still falling apart.
I heard that song and it just sent me back to like my childhood memories. Like when we had a 4-year, 5-year period where our family just moved from Maryland to Georgia. And it's just another one of those transition moments that it was emotionally very difficult for me. I think just uprooting myself from leaving friends and all this. And then you start to make a lot of friends. This is my middle school years too. So it's just a very wild, you know, hormonal time too. So it's like a lot of those first memories and emotions, you know, and spikes of emotion really. So I, Georgia in that period of time just has a very, I don't know. It's also the time I found saxophone and found jazz for the first time in 8th grade. So it's something about that period of time where your first crushes, your first falling in love with music. You know what I mean? When I heard that song and I heard the long inner voice and the title, it was too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Was it love at first listen? Like, did you
oh, yeah,
really like,
yeah.
I just have to bump this
It was like, too period. Much. It was too much. Yeah, I was on, and then also my first year at Juilliard, I met Christian Scott. So I ended up going. He calls me for a tour, I think, in 2012. So the tour ended up being my sophomore year. But yeah, I'm playing it nonstop backstage to the point that like his wife at the time or fiance at the time, Isadora, she started singing that song. Then he started working that song into the set. There might be some videos in 2012 or 2013. And you could find it of us playing Georgia by Emily King. And that's really? Completely my fault. Yeah. I was obsessed.
I was obsessed.
Playing it nonstop. They even did a double bill one time, I think in Brooklyn at Weeksville Festival.
Really?
It was dope. And then once I saw her perform live, you know, I was done.
I'm glad you mentioned the live show because a friend of mine and I, we went to see Emily's show here in LA at the Masonic Lodge, which is on the inside of Hollywood Forever, the cemetery. Uh-huh. And that was in February. And she said when she was speaking to the audience when she first came out that like, when her people, you know, her reps had said, you know, we got this show for you in the cemetery. She was like, well, no, you know what I mean? I'm not about to really play because she really didn't know the vibe. And when she came in and could see that she was like actually going to be inside a lodge and not like, you know, in the cemetery. Yeah. And it was one of the best shows that I've ever been. The acoustics in that building are out of control. Actually,
she's got an aura too. You know, she's got like a Prince-esque like just thing about her.
Were purple. That was the
Real?
The lights were purple in there over the vibe, and the show was just so fire. At some point, I was like, "We gonna end up having to just like stage dive on Emily, just run up on Emily afterward because she's killing." But the one thing that I remember was not only were the acoustics perfect, not only was it intimate, but this sort of rare politeness in the audience that you don't see that much because there's somebody usually drinking and talking, and you can hear.
Yeah,
you know, you have to tell them. And you could hear a pin drop. The other thing that struck me, and I think it might have just been her and James Most, if I'm not mistaken. It was just two people, right?
That boy, James.
Just them. Yeah. And there was just such a quiet respect that came. I mean, we literally, my friend and I walked away like, what has just happened to us? And I wanted to play a little bit from her show. Christian, if you can pull it up. It's her show at the Rockwood in 2012. And she's playing Georgia live. And I just wanted you to hear a little bit.
That's the video. Yes.
Are you there? Were you there?
I wasn't there, but that is the video where I was just upset. Is it black and white?
Yes. Come back, Georgia, come back. Come back, Georgia, come back. I just need another chance. Just to make it better. I was unhappy the day you left out my door. Oof, that is it. I mean, it is just a stunning piece of video. Her vocalists. I can appreciate the building more because I went to the Rockwood first time this year, also in February. I flew out there for my birthday to see Van Hunt. And when I walked in, one of my homeboys was like, oh man, so much fire has happened in here. There have been some legendary shows. And so watching this all over again and imagining her in that environment, it was the perfect environment. And the takeaway from that for me was how similar she sounded in the moment as she sounds on the album. Mm-hmm. There's just something pristine about her voice that doesn't waver or change, you know, with the environment. Just to make it better. Georgia, come back. Come back, Georgia, come back. One of our earliest shows, when we first started doing the podcast, we had Bowers on. And I told Oliver, I was like, I know this dude. I've known him for a minute. Brush up on your Thelonious Monk because this is what he's about to talk about. Get into Thelonious. Yep. I'm going to go brush up on Thelonious. So we'll get ready. And then his rep hit us and was like, he wants to talk about Section 80. And we were like, Kendrick Lamar's Section 80? And they were like, yeah. So we were like, okay, mind's blown, because we're thinking we're going to go down a jazz.
The jazz, you know, route. Yeah, no.
What was interesting was he was able to really talk about the jazz leanings that are within Kendrick's music. And right. turned us on to a different perspective we didn't know. So my question for you is, do you hear jazz? What do you hear, if jazz or whatever? What is it that you hear as a musician, as a vocalist, that makes Emily's music so special?
Oh, yeah, the harmony. You know what I mean? I guess saxophone is probably my best skill, but, you know, I study harmony as well. I study harmony. I love harmony. The harmony is dense. It's not just pop chords. You know, even in Georgia, it's come back, Georgia, come back. And then the second chord is this diminished chord. You know, that second chord is so crunchy. It's so nice.
Yeah.
It's like her choices are just, I don't know, they're not the simple 1-4-5-1, whatever. You know what I mean? It's not the very simple pop changes. She makes just subtle choices. You can tell, like, that she's, if not studying music herself, she has jazz musicians in her band.
Sure.
So it's like, it's in there, and I can hear it, and it's just done so subtly. That's what I love about it.
I mean, one of the things that I like about her vocals is what you mentioned, the choices, and that she ain't, you know, running all over the place. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's
right.
Cute.
I love that stuff too.
I love it. I love it. I grew up in the church, so.
Me too.
You got to be up here. You know what I mean? but I love that there's so much in the voice that it leans a lot of ways for me. Soul and folk and jazz. And she's got all that in how she sings. And she makes you lean forward and listen to her. She never
overpowers.
There's
a lot of breath in her voice too, which I love that on any instrument. I love the air, the airiness and that quality. And like my favorite saxophonists have that kind of sound in it. You know what I mean? There's some that sing and play with a very bright just tone. And then there's some that just, there's air into it. And air is life. You know, it's like, I love that part of it. I love hearing her breath in the music.
Well, speaking of breath, I have to talk about, and usually we get into this later in the show, but since you brought it up, one of my favorite tracks, I think my favorite track on here, is the first one I heard, which is Every Part. The way that she starts out, I mean, I love the way the song starts, that we have to wait a while, that there's stuff going on in the background, we don't know what it is. I love the guitar. I love how the song ends with what to me sounds like someone's doing a sound bath. But essentially, the air and the breath in her voice, she essentially had me at All You Ever Do. I could have turned the song off right there. I was like, okay, this is it right here.
The folk, the space. I'm getting more and more into that, the space.
It's just so engaging. You're just drawn in from the beginning. And the first time I heard it, I was like, yep. I usually carry with me, I'm pretty old school, so I usually carry with me like a sticky pad full of sticky notes of songs that I fall in love with, and I make notes. I'm going to place this, you know, I have a list of like, before I finish wrap this career, I want to place this on this, on this, on this. And that was one of it. And I was like, I've got to. And I got beat to it by a brother that I really respect. His name is Terrence Nance, and he placed this in the Oversimplification of Her Beauty. So shouts out to him. Yeah. It's a gorgeous film. And I have nothing but love for that brother. But that was one of those songs that at the moment I was like, yep, I don't know what moment, what scene, but this is going somewhere.
And all I ever wanted was something. And all I ever needed was nothing.
Every Part is my fire track, and you mentioned Georgia. Is that your fire track? Is that your favorite on this album?
Oh yeah, that's the one that brought me, that took me deep. That's the one that like took me, that brought me to it. This record, that's the one I always go back to. Down is also up there for me. God, anyway,
okay. I was gonna ask you.
Down is definitely up there for me. Once I heard Down, and then I found a video with Nick Hakim and her, and then I went down the whole Nick Hakim rabbit hole,
Lord.
And I find out we both from Maryland, and then it's wild. It's really wild. Nick Hakim is another one. Trying to figure out
And we'll be back with more of our conversation with Braxton Cook on Emily King's 7 after a brief word from a couple of great Max Fun podcasts. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we host Round Springfield.
Round Springfield is a Simpsons adjacent podcast where we talk to your favorite Simpsons writers, voice actors, and everyone who's worked on the show to talk about shows that aren't The Simpsons. So we're going to be talking to people like David X. Cohen, Yeardley Smith, Tim Long about other projects they've worked on, sometimes projects that didn't go well, some failures, some rejection,
some failed pilots, some failed life events.
Yeah, we just talked to all the failures of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So if you really love your Simpsons trivia and want to get to know the people who have worked on The Simpsons a little bit better, come by Round Springfield.
Every other week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dead Pilot Society brings you exclusive readings of comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Patton Oswalt.
So the vampire from the future sleeps in the dude's studio during the day, and they hunt monsters at night. It's Blade meets the Odd Couple.
Adam Scott and Jane Levy.
Come on, Corey. She's too serious, too businessy. She doesn't know the hokey pokey.
Won't she learn what it's all about?
Busy Phillips and Dave Koechner.
Baby, this is family.
My Uncle Tell, who showed his wiener to Cinderella at Disneyland, is family. Do you want him staying with us?
He did stay with us for 3 months.
And he was a delight.
A new pilot every month, only on Dead Pilot Society for maximum fun.
Yo, and we are back on Heat Rocks talking Emily King's 7 with our guest Braxton Cook. Usually on this show, we have people talk about a fire track and we don't give them a first runner up. But you mentioned Down, so that would be your that would be your runner up. Okay,
that's the runner up for sure.
What is it about that jam that does it for you?
The intro is like a cathedral. It's like all this reverb. All these reflections, and then
I just don't understand.
Like, what?
They say love is compromise. What does that leave us? When I look in your eyes, just seem to get.
I mean, lyrically, like, how is it, I guess, doing the complete opposite from what the lyrics were saying?
It just makes me want to float. You just float on out of here.
You really forget about your problems.
Yeah.
just that. It's incredible.
For sure.
You're like, you're almost, it takes you to a spiritual place. Like, you're really ready to just like float away straight up.
You know, when you really love an album, I know it's hard to pick one favorite. We are very aware on this show that we're putting people in tough positions. So, you know, I appreciate you, you know, choosing one and then choosing another. That said.
Georgia. Yeah.
Georgia. That's you?
Yeah. Still. Because of that nostalgic, melancholy, the melancholic tone, that feeling, and just what that meant. Means to me in particular.
Sure.
You know, and my time in Georgia and just, yeah, for me, that's the one.
I would say Every part, as I mentioned, is my... It's so hard. This is just...
I know. Every part is your one. You said it.
It is. It is.
Uh-huh.
But let me get into this hypocrisy. It is hard to pick one. But I have so many favorites, it's hard to choose. But I love radio. Radio, it's the meaning behind radio. I love the time she takes to liken music to spirituality. And I love mm-hmm. the sweetness with which she speaks about her love. When she talks about mm-hmm. Aretha and Hendrix and Marley, I'm just like, come on, my nieces, my niece and nephew are named Hendrix and Marley.
Hendrix and Marley.
So it's precious.
Yes, you're right. You're yeah. absolutely right.
And how she talks about, like, you know, no one taps into the blues like Aretha for her. And Hendrix and Marley. Christian, can you play some of it?
Buddha and the boat sing a lovely note. Take my soul to where it wants to go. Hendrix and Marley always do it right for me. If I had one religion.
Then the bass comes in? Oh my God. You gotta let that rock, Christian. Less is more with this record. It's like arrangement. I did, you know, I think in jazz, we definitely come from, all right, one, two, three, four, boom. We're all playing at the same time. And it's like, you can do so much by taking the bass out, waiting, and like bring it in. Do the whole verse. That whole thing was just a cajon and her, you know, just, that's it, the whole thing. And then you wait for the bass to come in and it's just like, arrangement is so powerful. Like what you don't say, what's not playing.
Sure, sure. And how you occupy the space when there is space.
Right. It's just, it's crazy. It's things that you know, it's funny. It's like I've gone to school to study music and sometimes it can take you years later to come full circle to these ideas, you know. Very simple ideas, but powerful.
Which brings up a point. I got to ask you, man, like, uh-huh. you know, How has this album influenced you as a musician, or what will you take away from it, you know, going forward and stuff that you arrange or stuff that you worked on after this album? How did it influence your production, your output?
I mean, you could say a lot of the record is almost ballad like there it grooves, right? But it probably doesn't go past, I don't know, maybe 100 beats per minute. Most of the songs, you know, they're all in that range. I do that a lot. That alone.
Really?
A lot of my songs live in this. Yeah, like you can look at it in logic. I'm like, oh wow, I don't have anything really faster than this certain tempo. It's something about that pocket that I love. So with regard to tempo, I mean, I've definitely been influenced by that. I write a lot of ballads.
Yeah,
and I think eventually in the live setting, when it comes to like, all right, how am I going to cater to the crowd and put a set together? The tempos start to change in our live arrangements, but. In the conception, I think I sit at the piano or guitar and I write from the heart and end up being ballads. So, and with this kind of vibe, you know, there's something about that melancholic feeling. Like even when I wrote my record Somewhere in Between that I wanted to capture, it speaks to me that this idea of not fitting in, this idea of trying to find yourself, this, you know, there's a seriousness to it, but there's a sweetness to it. There's a lightness and a darkness to it. I like that.
Thank you for mentioning Somewhere in Between, because we did an episode on comfort albums, the five mm-hmm. albums we were listening to. We picked the starting five of albums that we were listening to during this time, this yeah. craziness, this pandemic that bring us comfort. And Somewhere in Between was my fifth pick. So thank you for bringing that up. We talk on this show a lot about moments, like if there are favorite moments on any album, meaning, you know, favorite parts of the song or favorite breaks in the song. And what I think is my favorite moment on the album, it comes towards the end of a song called Sides, which is fire. I mean, See, now you're going to make me change. Now I'm going to start to change my my favorite jam. When we get into the album, this happens to me sometimes on shows when I'm by myself. When Oliver's here, he can keep me structured. But left to my own devices, I got a favorite song every 5 minutes.
You're switching up. Yeah.
You feel me? Every 5 minutes, I'm like, no, that's the one. But if you, Christian, if you could play Sides from around the 2:14 moment.
Ooh. She was riffing on that.
Yo.
She tapped in.
I mean, yo, it has a Prince-esque quality in there. It just gets chunky and thick. And I wasn't expecting that in the song. And that's what I like. It's like she just, you know, she took off and sailed to the end.
She really earned those ad-libs, don't she? Yo. It's like when she does them, it's like, oh, that's exactly what it needed.
Right.
It's crazy.
But I wasn't ready. You know what I'm saying? I was in here clutching my pearls. Like, what just happened on this jam? But it was a welcome surprise, you know, a warm surprise and a welcome one. Music heads always go back to a certain part, and we always talk about this part right here, this part right here. Do you have one of those moments on 7?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's the key change in Georgia.
Georgia's yours.
People don't be doing. Yeah, I mean that's my jam. That's the fire one for me.
Yeah,
but it's like, people don't be doing key changes like that. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, when people do, it's like, oh, okay, and like, it's very much we're used to that in church all the time.
Oh yeah.
And it, like you said, there's so many elements of spirituality in church in her music. But yeah, like just that she's in like what G major, and then it just goes up to A flat. Yeah, it's crazy. And
you
then she
right.
comes in with that riff. Yeah, I love that moment. People don't, they don't change key enough.
They don't.
And we just make loops and just let it run.
That's it. And I'm glad you brought that up because I was watching the live, the verses between, it was between John P. Key and Hezekiah Walker.
Oh, come on now.
Right. Did you see that verses last week?
No, I didn't know.
They were killing. And at some point, someone in the chat said that Hezekiah Walker is sort of the king of modulating. Like, you know, when you join his choir, your lung capacity's got to be on point, right? Because, you know, he's going to go through a plethora of key changes. But outside of gospel, I don't hear it that much anymore. So your point is well taken.
Like love on top, you know, like, and that was a moment. Like, it was like, oh, shoot, okay, Beyonce got something.
She going here.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, it's not common at all in pop music.
No.
It's not.
No.
So I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's a great point. People bring back key changes. I've identified in the course of this show, Heat Rocks, things you need to bring back. We need to bring back intros, voicemail messages, you know what I mean, on the album. And please, Braxton and I want us to bring back key changes.
Bring back modulation. The key change. I'm talking to myself. I don't have not one key change in none of my songs. So.
Braxton, you got to bring back the key changes then.
I do.
You know, in prep for the chat, we usually ask guests to re-listen to the album because we want to know from you anything that you might have heard differently this time around that maybe you might not have heard or noticed the first time you listened to it. And any nuances, anything that you discovered this time around in listening to it or just listening to it while we've been talking here.
I think that, during this quarantine, I've been teaching myself guitar.
Like, nice.
I just been on YouTube, you know? I'm getting to that place. I'm like, all right, cool. I can play like chords or whatever. And so once you learn a new instrument, it's like, you just hear it. You start hearing things that you hadn't before. So there's a lot of things, miking things I've noticed on the acoustic guitar on this record that are techniques I want to start checking out. Certain voicings that like I said, arrangement things. Cause I'm also, you know, producing a lot more and just trying to make music every day. And I think there are things that those are definitely things like songwriting and arrangement wise. I, I, I can honestly say in 2012, 2013, no, I wasn't paying attention to it. I was really just listening to her voice and the lyrics, you know?
Sure.
And I think as a saxophonist, like, you're typically carrying the melody in a lot of these situations. I'm up front. I play, y'all follow me type situation. And I think I to be honest, like, yes, I gloss over the bass and the function of when they're playing and what bass lines they're playing and what's happening with the drums and just things that rhythm section players are very aware of, you know? So, yes, with the second listen, I'm noticing all of these different timbral changes in the rhythm section and the arrangements that I was honestly not listening to before.
Is there a song that pushed itself to the forefront on this most recent listen that you might not have given enough play to first time around?
Not necessarily for those reasons, but songs like Sides and Every Part, yeah. I didn't listen to as much. So, you know, when you listen to like a classic record and you go back to it, sometimes you skip, like you go back to listen to Thriller and you kind of skip Thriller sometimes,
yeah.
And you start going, you know what I mean? And you want to like, let me listen to like the joint with Paul McCartney, or, right. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
right.
So in that sense, yeah, just in general. Yeah. I'm like my second time around, I just want to listen to the other songs that maybe not Georgia as much, maybe not Radio as much. Check out Sides and Every Part. So in general, those stuck out a little bit more now.
All you ever do, make me smile all of the time, all the time.
For me, going back and listening to it in prep for the chat, I spent a little bit more time with No More Room. And it wasn't that I had skipped over No More Room the first time. It was that I wasn't in a place to receive No More Room the way I received it today. You know, it's some things are best understood when you're looking over your shoulder, right? And having the benefit of hindsight. And I was like, see, I know what you're talking about now. At the time it came out, I was like, I don't know. I still have room. Today I was like, no more room.
No more room.
Something in a dream that I can't let go. No more room in my life for you, dear. No more room.
So that's the one. It's just that melody's pretty. I mean, it just rolls. The tempo is perfect. She slides a few runs in there when you're not expecting, just hits you upside your head with a run when you didn't think she had that in her pocket. And it's just so pretty and just such a pretty way to sing a song that's so vulnerable and so personal. I hope that this episode will encourage folks to go back and not just get into this album. You know, get into all of her albums. If I ever meet her, I think my question is going to be, what's your thing with the S's? All of it. Seven, Switch, Scenery, you know, Sides, all of her albums are around S's. So I want to know what's up with the consonants. But either way, all those albums are fire. And she is a giant talent. So... So if you had to describe Emily King's Seven in three words, what would they be?
Melancholy, love, and searching.
I like that. If you like Emily King's Seven, what else should you check out? And I'll go first. If you like Emily King's Seven, I would say, and usually I have a recommendation of another artist, but I would say stay with the catalog, skip forward and go to Scenery, because it's nice to see. I love to see an artist's development and how they change from album to album. So I would say skip ahead to Scenery, stay with Emily King and get into the discography so it'll bring life to the things Braxton and I are saying.
Did you hear about me? I got off the ground. I stood up when you left me, baby, look at me now.
What would be your pick if people like Seven? What else should they check out?
Oh, you got to check out Nick Hakim's Green Twins. Come on. Throw it on. Leave it on. And run that and just run it back.
And hope you make it out, you know? Hope you make it out, because that's when you talk about
and then
melancholy.
Go watch him sing live and then go watch the Tiny Desk and then go watch the Pitchfork. Yo. It's like, how is he doing this? It's crazy.
Yo. I almost said Brittany mm-hmm. Howard's Jamie, but I
feel that too.
Yeah, that could be the number two. But I would say first, you know, get deep into Emily King's discography, then pull yourself back together emotionally. Go into Nick Hakim, then pull yourself back together
again.
Georgia, see you don't know. I'm afraid to tell you how I really feel. I'll show you what I really mean when I say hello. Well, that's going to do it for our conversation with Braxton Cook on Emily King's Seven. What's going on with you now? What are you working on now?
Like I said, I'm writing music every day. I have a little quarantine journal, private SoundCloud. It's just new music I'm making. You know, I have that record Fire Sound I just put out. So I'm still like sharing it with friends.
And it's beautiful.
It to people. Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate that. And I got another project, honestly, that's sitting in the tuck.
I'm just okay.
I think as I'm learning all these different instruments, I'm just, I don't know, inspired to just make different things and my production. You know, it's just like there's so much free time. There's so much time now. It's like I'm just like making music every day, polishing, learning new skills. And I'd love to be at a place where I can just create a song start to finish.
Sure.
You know, make sure. And completely do it myself during this period where we're just kind of at home. Like, why, you know, why not?
For
I know
sure.
I can play saxophone, but it's like I can't tour with anybody right now, so
no.
I might as well figure out all these other pieces to the puzzle, and it only helped me be a better musician, and only helped me like hear and understand where everyone's coming from on the bandstand when the world does open back up.
And where can folks find you on the socials?
It should just be Ed Braxton Cook. I don't think there's too many of them out there. So Ed Braxton Cook on Instagram, Twitter, Braxton Cook Music on Facebook. And then you can find my music at Fireside and any of my music on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever else you want to download or listen to music.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.